Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
You are now listening to the Black Geeks.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised.
Oh, no, you can pretty much guarantee the revolution will not be televised because freedom of speech is under attack, y'all. People are getting muzzled up in these streets, y'all. Oh, my goodness. It is crazy. We are living in unusual times, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters. Welcome to another exciting, passionate, empowering, knowledge-filled episode of Geeks on Politics. I am your ever effervescent host, Big Baba Rob. And of course, I've got some fabulous geeks on the radio with me. Ladies and gentlemen, we got Dark Phoenix. Phoenix, how you doing today?
I'm good. Well, you know, I'm pushing through. I was about to say I'm good, but you know.
All good. And we're going to be joined shortly.
I thought you were going to say alt good, actually.
No. Yeah. We're
all. Like, it's a little too early.
This is true. Yeah, you know, it was so funny. We kind of opened the show, our Sunday show with kind of alt personalities. So, you know, I completely and totally understand, because we're definitely living in the world of alt reality, alt facts, alt truth. I mean, it's just, there's so much alting going on. It is just absolutely amazing. I don't know if all of you all out there have been following along some of these press conferences. I've been listening in or watching them. It's amazing. The manipulation of truth and facts, figures, perception, it is just outstanding. I'm going to tell you, Phoenix, I don't think I can remember a time that I wasn't in a movie theater watching people that have such a hard time with reality or just even admitting truth, wanting to. I don't think I've ever seen anybody with such a difficulty acknowledging just facts, figures, or even common sense for that matter. And it's just absolutely astounding.
Yeah, no, we're living.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say it's a really bizarre and scary time right now. Very scary, I think. Kelly Conway, and like just her whole, you know, it's alternative facts, you know, and like people, and you actually look on, you know, online, there are people who are eating this up, who are just like, yeah, they're just constantly trying to discredit. So it's like talking to a brick wall almost, you know, when it comes to just the blatant lies that are going on, you know, and it's almost to the point where like, just like the whole thing with the inauguration, you know, how Trump has been so much, even in his recent interview, he kept talking about the size of the inauguration crowd. He couldn't get over it. And it was just like, even with pictures, it was just like, no, it was the biggest one ever. And, you know, his media person was like, it was the biggest inauguration ever, period. And it's like, what, you know, like what planet are we living on right now is my question.
But to even take that to the next level, I was watching that press conference and he said, the guy actually said, Spicer actually said, well, we don't have the numbers, but it's the biggest one ever. Like, wait a minute. you just said that you don't have the numbers, but then you turn right around within two heartbeats and say, but it was the biggest ever. You don't have the numbers. And then they totally misquoted the numbers from Metro. Those numbers were completely wrong. And so it's interesting because the more that I've watched and that it's this distortion and I'm going to welcome to the show Darky Conius here in a second because he joined us. I'll welcome him now. Darky Conius, welcome aboard Geeks on Politics, man. How are you doing this evening?
I'm just listening to y'all and I'm just like, we're living in the Twilight Zone. That's what I feel like. We're literally in the Twilight Zone. Up right. is down is up, you know. Yep. It's crazy.
And it's incredible because and I wanted to bring you on because I'm about to quote you several years ago. This gentleman here made the point. He said something that kind of changed my life a little bit about controlling the narrative. Because what they're doing, this is beyond spin. This is beyond perception or perspective. It's beyond that. It's where you actually take facts and say the facts aren't facts. And then you create a situation where you say, oh, well, the media is against me. The media is crooked. And then you say, well, you really just need to listen to me. And it's just, it is absolutely, it is insane on all possible levels. I mean, I was thinking about the speech that he gave at, I think it was the CIA, and it was like he was saying things that like, what are you talking? That's not true. That's not what happened. What do you? I mean, and so it is. He's creating this false narrative, and then he's got all these people around him that are propagating the false narrative, and this really speaks to the base, and this really speaks to why we're even here at this point because his folks have been allowed, and when I say his folks, the people who supported him were allowed to control. They took just the narrative of what they were fed and never bothered to educate themselves. And Phoenix, I think that's a really big problem is that a lot of the people that supported him, you know, some of them knew and just ignored and they just wanted change. But some people just like actually took the things that were being told to them and just regurgitated them without even bothering to fact check themselves. So, I mean, Phoenix, I think this speaks very heavily to a lack of an educated electorate. Would you agree to that?
I do. I agree with that. I mean, it's also, I mean, even if you, I mean, honestly, like, even if we do, and we also, we live in an age right now where, you know, a lot of the time people are getting most of their news from social media platforms, you know, Twitter, Facebook, and there was all this whole thing about what's fake news. And then, you know, fake news got co-opted by the right. And so even if you are an educated person, even if you do know the, you know, who your, you know, senator is and all this other stuff, there are still ways that even the most educated person can, you know, even though, of course, we're like critical of every single thing now that comes out of the GOP and Trump's mouth, there's still this thing that if you don't, you know, do the research yourself, you know, you honestly could take it at face value. You know, you could, you know, there's an active, it's not like this stuff is a mistake. There's an active push to misdirect and misinform the people. And that's strategic. And when it's strategic like that, when there's a whole arsenal of money and media, right-wing media and whatnot behind that, even some of the people who consider themselves the most educated could fall prey to not knowing all the facts or at least not knowing what we can do in terms of combating what they're saying and doing. You know, it's an attack. It's an attack on like true democracy, and it's an attack on it's just an attack on our livelihoods as well. But it's strategic. You know, this isn't a mistake. This isn't just a one man show of Trump either. You know, and that's another thing to point out. This isn't just Trump. This is like there's the GOP, all of that. They're behind this. You know, they're not behind it. You know, they're very much. You know, they're letting him be the face of it, but it's very much, it's not just he's like some, you know, renegade or something.
Right. And, you know, and Geekonius It's just like when I was referring to the CIA speech he gave the other day, where he's going into the CIA and saying, I don't know why, I'm paraphrasing, I don't know why the media's made up these stories that I don't respect you and I don't like you. But the hard fact was he's the one several times that compared the CIA to Nazi Germany. The media didn't create that. You actually said it. There is a record, and it's still in your Twitter account that you said it. But yet you're saying, well, I don't know why the media made this up. You know, I don't know why they did it. They, you did it. Econius, it's maddening to think that you really think everyone is that dumb, or you really just don't want us to pay attention, or you just pandering to your base. I just don't get it, Econius. I don't get it.
Well, here it is, in my opinion. I think it's a cultural thing in the sense that there was a time in America where being informed, having a degree, having experience was a valued thing. You elevated people based on their knowledge and their command of the facts and things of that nature, and somehow the right was able to co-opt that as, oh, they're just liberal elites, and liberal elites lie, and so we don't have to listen to them. So they dumped down the electorate to such a degree that even if you just ignore all the shenanigans about the immigrants somehow costing him the popular vote or all this stuff he's just making up out the fly, you have people that he's literally backtracking on everything he said. We're going to bring jobs back to America. We're going to tax Mexico to pay for this wall. Meanwhile, all my suits are made in Mexico. You know, we're going to make America great again. Meanwhile, all my hats are made in China. You know, it's only barely been a week. He's gone back on basically everything he said, and they're so dumbed down to what's going on, so uninterested in finding out what's going on, that they will accuse people of making this stuff up. The more we yell about what the actual facts are, that's what they mean by alternate facts. They know it's a lie, but they know that there's truth. And then there's what they can tell their followers, and they'll just, you know, they completely shifted the paradigm. And now it's, I'm at war with the media. So it's like, don't even believe anything the media says. Just believe what I say. And we could laugh. We can get frustrated. But the main thing is, this is extremely dangerous. We have crept so deep into fascism in just a week that it's scary when you look at it from the offset. I mean, complete government agencies being silenced. They're not allowed to, you know, talk with the public. The threatening of the media. It's a lot of crazy things going on. And Keith Olbermann has basically put it out there. And I lean toward what Keith Olbermann said. We may have to come to the conclusion that there's actually just something wrong with him. He might literally be completely off kilter with some kind of mental illness. And the worst part about it is he has the nuclear codes.
Yep.
And if his truth is the only truth, as Keith Olbermann recently posited on his show called The Resistance, he said, how far before we get, you mean Bush and them had to orchestrate this big thing about going to Iraq to where it's at least, well, a smart person could look at it and even fall for it. He doesn't even have to do that. He could just say, look, this is going to work out because I'm Trump. They threatened us. Let's do it. And
right.
I mean, McConnell and Ryan get up there and justify spending $15 to $20 billion to build this wall. I thought we were making Mexico pay for it.
Right. So let's talk about that just for a hot second. So for those of you who have not been paying attention, let me just give you a quick rundown of what's happened in the last 48 hours. So there was supposed to be a meeting between the new president, our new president, and the president of Mexico. Mexico, right? And so what happened was, you know, their people were trying to work out the deal. But basically, the president of Mexico posted a video last night and said, basically, you know, we're not paying for the wall. We're not paying for the wall, period. Now, if you look at the comments that Trump then made today, he said, now the president of Mexico said, I canceled the meeting. I'm not going. So the spin today was from our president was that, oh, well, we decided to cancel the meeting because since they weren't going to pay for the wall, there was really no point in us meeting. And then he turns around and says, well, what we're going to do. So now, wait a minute now. So he said that the Mexico is going to pay for the wall, right? Okay, that's what he said. So then he backed up and said, okay, wait. Actually, the American people are going to pay for the wall and Mexico is going to pay us back. So then Mexico said, we ain't paying for no doggone wall. In no uncertain terms. And so he comes back and say, okay, so what we're going to do is, okay, they're not going to pay for the wall. So what we're going to do is we're going to tax them 20% on their imports. Now, if I have any basic understanding of economy, if you put a 20% tax on an import coming in, typically that's passed on to the consumer. So if I'm understanding this properly, not only are the American people going to have to pay the $15 billion to $20 billion for the wall, okay? But then you're going to have to pay more on your imports from Mexico. He I got y'all like coming and going. This is amazing. This man is actually going around telling other countries what they are going to do. He said today, if they don't respect America, then something's going to happen. This Phoenix, he's actually, I almost like Coney said, I think he may be out of his mind for real.
Yeah, I do. I agree. I think he has some sort of, I don't know, you know, and I also don't want to like, you know, play up this whole idea of like mental illness or whatever with him either, because we're not doctors. I don't want to like, you know, give this person an out. He, you know, in terms of like, you know, it's not, you know, him or whatever. He just, you know, that's just what it is. I think it's also just he may just be a really narcissistic. I mean, we already know he's a really narcissistic person. With size complex. But you know, it's also this idea, and what I said before, that it's not just him though. You know, the whole thing about Obamacare and everything like that. That's not just him attacking these things. It's not just him, you know, fueling, you know, even though the papers are getting put in front of him and whatnot, we have to believe that there's people who are completely in the GOP who are completely okay and want, you know, many of the steps he's making, you know, like the Dakota Access Pipeline and things of that nature. Yeah, it's like there are people who have interest in this. And yes, he's being the face of it, but even if he had something wrong with him or not mentally or whatever, it's this idea that one, he doesn't know. I mean, one of the main reasons why he got, you know, there was like a large chunk of the, you know, white working class or whatever who supported this man was because of this idea of we're tired of the same old politicians. We're tired of the same old, they just keep screwing us over, blah, blah, blah. And the thing is, sometimes politicians, as slimy as some of them can be, they don't get their due in the sense that they do have this sense of diplomacy. They do have the sense of being able to finesse, you know, this is what Obama was able to do with other countries. This is what, you know, previous presidents in certain to lesser or more degrees were able to do. He doesn't have that, you know, he doesn't, you know, he's a crass businessman who basically a failed businessman, you know, with all his bankruptcies and debt and whatnot. And that's what he's taking with him into the White House. You know, he doesn't know how to talk to other people. You know, you kind of need that to be able to like negotiate with other countries, period, other human beings. You know, he doesn't know how to play that game or whatnot. So you have that going on for it. And then you have this idea where he even said that some weeks ago where he was like, you know, oh, we're going to have Mexico pay for it or whatever. And, you know, and the former president of Mexico was like cussing him out on Twitter and was like, what are you talking about, man? Like, we're not paying for your effing wall. And he, you know, he called it. And now, like you said, there's this idea of, okay, you know, they wouldn't meet with us. So, you know, so it gets turned around to, we didn't want to meet with them. You know, this is all just posturing. This is, and this is, and there are people who are believing it, but I do think that there's a positive in this. And we're seeing that particularly with, you know, the attack on Obamacare and whatnot, that there are people, the people that we said who voted for this man, who are definitely going to get, you know, crapped on because of the decisions he's making. And some of them are realizing that now. So that's going on, even though there are many of them who, I think there's a willful ignorance going on. I don't think it's just simply ignorance. I think some, for some people, it's willful ignorance because they don't want to admit, you know, that they made a mistake at this point, you know? So there's a little bit of all that going on there. There's a lot of denial. And unfortunately, we still have people on the left who want to claim, you know, oh, it would have been just as bad with Hillary still, or Killary, as they still want to call her. And it's kind of like, wake up, people. Like, it wasn't going to be worse. Like, I feel like I can confidently say that. Or it wasn't going to be the same as it is right now, you know?
Go ahead, Rob.
No, go ahead, keep going. It's fine.
You know, on that topic, debt alone, okay, we all, I think on this show, agree that Hillary was a corporatist, right? And to sure. some degree, we should have expected corporations to get kickbacks of some sort. But there's nothing that anyone can say with a straight face that it would have been on this level. Would you have made some moderate, slight right to the center policies that also benefited corporations? Absolutely. But would you bring in an entire cabinet of uninformed billionaire ideologues that only make policies that benefit them and squeeze the rich? You know, Phoenix brought up the point about him being a failed businessman with all these bankruptcies. And that's not actually, he's not failed because of that. That's actually the strategy. So he's actually good at what he does, which is why he's as rich as he is and how many, you know, assets he has. Because the strategy for barons like him is that you go in, you license your name. So like, he doesn't own these buildings. He just, you know, they pay a license to use his name because the name is supposed to be with a brand that means luxury and all this other stuff. You get as much of out the company as you can. You pay little, you raise costs, and you suck it dry for everything you can suck it dry for. And then when it's ready for it to shut down because it can't stay afloat, then you claim bankruptcy and you don't have to pay anything. And so you take your wealth, your cash, and you rinse and repeat. This is why the tax returns aren't going to ever be released, because the tax returns would show that he doesn't pay taxes. Because everyone knows, if you got any type of business, that the number one thing that you do as a business owner is your CPA looks to find out what were your losses that year to offset your liability. Well, if the IRS were to look at his wealth and his assets and say, let's just throw a number out there, he had to pay $300 million in taxes. All they need to do is look at all his assets and count how much losses. And his losses just need to add, you know, equal more than that amount. So his tax liability is zero. And that's the game he's been playing forever. So he doesn't want to show the American people that, hey, not only do I have businesses all over the world and with countries and shady practices, but I never pay taxes because I've made a hustle out of not paying taxes and running companies into the ground, claim bankruptcy so I have no liability and they can't touch my money. And I just keep doing it. And that's what they're trying to do to the federal government. They want to run up the board, make sure they get a lot of profit out of this. And then when everything starts crumbling, they'll be gone. And then it's going to take another president to come in and try to clean up all the crap, just like Obama had to do. And that's the problem, because these followers of his came into this. I don't believe in the myth of the working white class person, personally. I think that's a myth, and it's just a way of saying a bunch of angry white people. even though a lot of them were prior Obama supporters. There's another thing we don't talk about, that, you know, those people in Michigan and Wisconsin, they voted for Obama twice. They came into the whole ideology of he's going to make America white again, and everything's going to be just like that famous gospel singer who got in trouble because she had a picture of this white guy carrying luggage talking about Jesus is coming back, you know, because Jesus wasn't there in the last 8 years when the black guy was there. You see, there was a lot of racial overtones. You know, let's get rid of the evil liberals and their Muslim Kenyan black guy in the White House, you know, and that's why I said we live in a Twilight Zone. You know, the Obamas were not Christian and they weren't representing family values, but a guy who has several different baby mothers, several different divorces, his, you know, all these different things going on, this is now wholesome. He doesn't even open the door for his wife or hold his, you know, it's just sickening. I had to stop.
Yeah. I'm just going to go 30 minutes. You know, you know, you said something very important, and I think that I hope that really sinks in for folks, is how this administration is positioning these various individuals to destroy. And I'm gonna go ahead and use destroy. I mean, if you want to say revamp, relook at, reevaluate, recast, whatever you want to say, but they, you really look at who the individuals are. You're putting people in place who have sued the organizations that they're trying to head. You have people going into positions who, let's take Davos, for example, never set foot in a classroom, has gave $200 million to the GOP over X many years, you know, for the campaign. As I think it was Bernie Sanders pointed out, she said, excuse me, if your family hadn't given all that $200 million, you think you'd be sitting here right now? He actually called her out in the hearing. You got Rick Perry, who wanted to destroy, he wanted to get rid of the Department of Energy. But then he said, you know, I've really thought about it. Now that I actually know what the Department of Energy is, I take it back. I mean, at Department of Energy, yes.
DOE?
No. Rick Perry is supposed to be over the Department of Energy.
Oh, yeah. Either way, dummy.
Yeah. And then look at Rex Tillerson. Do I even need to go there with the Exxon guy? I don't think I even need to go there. But
hey, to the point, Triple H and Stephanie McMahon was at the hearing for Linda McMahon, obviously.
I saw that picture. That was Twilight Zone, straight Twilight Zone.
But you think about it.
I was joking with Lisa the other day about that.
You start joking with stuff. You know, we have a track record of saying things on this show, and they come to. I'm just saying, it's happened before. But you know, when you think about it, and how many times that he said, you know, he made it a point to even say it in his speech, and this is how you know you all are being lied to. I'm not being lied to because I know the truth. Y'all out there who think that he's gonna be the great white hope, and he's gonna make everything better. You know, he's sitting there saying, I'm going to return it to the people. The people will never be forgotten. I'm wondering who these people are he's talking about that were forgotten. I'm just curious. But you say, I'm returning the government to the people, but yet the first thing you do is you overturn the Keystone. Correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't there people, Americans, who are basically saying, don't build on our land? Native Americans are saying, we don't want this. This isn't good for us. But he just went ahead and signed it anyway. So the thing is that folks, they just have to see that they're being told things that just aren't true. And it's just amazing the systemic deconstruction of the various institutions to get rid of regulations. Or we're going to get rid of 75% of the regulations so that the businesses can just, you know, can grow and flourish. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the last president that was talking about making sure that the business can grow and flourish and not have regulations. Wasn't that trickle-down economics? Make sure that the businesses have the money so that they can pass it down to the people. Wasn't that trickle-down economics? I'm just curious. I think that's what that was.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The funny thing is how it never seems to trickle down.
Well, I'm just saying. Hey, Lil, we got a caller. I'm going to open the line and see if the caller has a question or comment. Welcome aboard. You're calling into Geeks on Politics. Do you have a comment or question, caller? From the...
Hey!
Hey!
I'm a first-time listener, and I've just been listening in... Okay. Just really enjoying the conversation. So my question to you would be, what's next? You know, what are we gonna do? Like, what's done is done. What happens now?
Ooh, that my favorite type of question.
I say, watch it. Look at it. Yeah, he just sat up in his chair. Like Garky Cody just sat up in his chair, all prim and proper. Because I'm gonna tell you, my friends, if anybody has the answer to that question, it is this gentleman. Caller, thanks so much. I'm gonna put you back on hold. You can listen in. You know, and that's one thing about this show is that we can go on and on and on about all the craziness and stuff, but we do actually have solutions to this. Garky Cody, would you care to even give just one fifth of some of the concepts or some of the things that we can do at this point?
Well, it's very simple. One of them is keep your eye on November 6, 2018.
Mm-hmm.
That is when we need to, you know, mobilize. You know, if we could turn out millions of people, we could completely... I don't think people understand why that date is important. Every House seat is up for grabs. Every House seat. And even though the House is gerrymandered to always favor the right, if we turned out huge turnout numbers and marched in the streets like we saw with the Women's March all over the world, we could turn out those numbers. We could completely flip the House, not to mention the races that's up for the Senate. So that's step one, you know, be completely laser focused on putting forward candidates, supporting candidates, you know, and in truth, from a pragmatic political strategy, vote anybody but Republican. They need to be punished as a party. I know it sounds very partisan to say that, but the way politics work, you know, you vote out that entire party and that would be a message loud and clear. And they would have a mandate. Look, we need to listen. We need to follow. You know, and plus we know that Democrats in general just don't support these policies. Number two, and this is a big one for a lot of people, especially if you're a geek and you're into pop culture like we are, you got to stop, you know, with this normalization of there's media out there and pop culture that want to, even leading up to this election when he was on, you know, different late night shows and they're playing with his hair and stuff. No, this guy has basically neo-Nazis in his party, in his leadership, in his messaging. They're doing all kinds of fascist things. Anybody who remotely tries to tell you that this guy is good and we should give him a chance, boycott. We need to learn how to boycott. It may be our favorite TV show, our favorite brand, our favorite product, but people respond to money. If we do this in mass, you know, there's a Us magazine that's about to come out and they're talking about the first family. And yes, children are innocent and stuff, but it's not just Barron Trump. It's those, you know, Usay and Kude. I mean, Eric and what's his name? Trump, you know, and the daughters. And you have to be like, no, this isn't cute. We're not happy that this is the first family. Boycott Us magazine. So for me, it's really threefold. You know, boycott, get involved politically and especially locally, because it's not just the House and the Senate we need to flip. We also need to look at our school boards, our governors, our mayors, our sheriffs, and also find yourself, you know, ally with different groups that promote diversity and is part of the quote unquote resistance. That's just not going to take it. If we're not firm and we're not laser focused on these things, we can easily be distracted over the next movie or the next fad or the next hashtag, you know, game or whatever you need to play on social media. So that's for me. It's really just three steps. Boycott, make sure we mobilize for the vote, and to ally with partners.
And those are really very, very important. Thank you, Conies, for giving that list. Caller, I'm going to open your line back for a second and see. Caller, did you have any other questions? Were you any feelings or comments about some of the things that Geekonius was naming?
Hi.
Hi.
I appreciate, first of all, for sharing those suggestions about moving forward, and those are very valid ideas that you have. I just have a few questions, if you don't mind answering them.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. So as far as voting out Republicans, how do we actually realistically go about doing that if there are people who support their ideas and their proposals?
Can I start on that, Geekonius, and let you pick it up?
Yeah, yeah.
First of all,
I have something to say to you.
Okay. All right. So what I'll do is I'll make a quick comment, then I bounce to you, Phoenix, and then I'll let Geekonius bring up the rear. First of all, you're in some areas, in some parts of the country, whether through gerrymandering, redistricting, it is very difficult. The challenge of unseating in certain locations is going to be difficult. But if you look at the percentage of individuals that actually come out to vote in some cases, in some places, the numbers are fairly low, 20%, 30% voting, especially on midterms. Midterms, sometimes people don't even know that it's coming up. So that's why it's important to inform and mobilize people and get them out to vote and understand that at least being a part of the voting process on the local basis, even if you don't agree with the national, the local is where it's going to make a lot of sense, and because that's where you're going to be directly impacted, because these are the people that serve you. And so, yes, geography plays a very significant role. Redistricting plays a very important role. But to the point Geekonius was making is that we've got to get people to turn out. They have to decide that they're going to do something different. You get enough people to change enough minds and hearts, you can definitely make it happen. Go ahead, Phoenix.
Okay. Yeah, I was just gonna. What was that?
Yeah, I was gonna let caller. Hold on 1 second. I was gonna let Phoenix comment and then let Geekonius answer your question as well. Go ahead, Phoenix.
Yeah, I was just gonna say. One of the things is understanding, especially for those who are in the millennial generation, that's like 18 to 35, is that when it comes to like the midterm elections and local elections, we don't necessarily turn out in mass. Like the average age for the mayoral elections is 60 years old. A lot of time, a lot of people turn out for the blockbuster, which is the, presidential election. And we saw that because, in all honesty, Clinton did win the popular vote. So we saw that more people in the population did not want Trump to win, but electoral college and all that. But when it comes to the midterm election, it's about getting people out, but it's not just about getting out there. It's also about combating the suppression that's going on, which is, voter suppression. One of the things that Trump is, and this is all about the misdirection again, he's all about, the whole thing about voter fraud, like people are illegals, quote unquote, are registered in more than one state, even though it's like Steve Bannon is one of the people who's, registered in two states, and some of his children are here and whatnot. But it's not just, it's a misdirection from the real culprit, which is the real problem, which is voter suppression, which a lot of the time keeps, people of color and those who are marginalized from being allowed to vote in the first place. So I would say not as a voter trying to get people out to vote who can get out there to vote, but also getting behind the campaign that the NAACP is very much in the head of, which is basically helping to combat voter suppression. They gutted the VRA, the Voting Rights Act. They gutted it, and there needs to be a mobilization around, restoring it fully, because we saw that helped in Trump winning the presidency as well, because that voter suppression was going on in a lot of the states that he ended up taking, So that's also something to get behind and find out more about and how we can help in combating what is basically, taking away people's right to vote that we fought so hard for, I would say.
Right. Right. Geekonis, go ahead and answer, and then I'll let the caller ask a follow-up. Go ahead.
You know, like you and Phoenix both touched on it in various degrees. Studies have shown that when there's high voter turnout, Democrats win elections. You know, and that's why every time you hear about voter suppression, it's coming from the Republican Party. Anytime you hear about rules, new rules about IDs, and, you know, we're going to change the different days of when you can vote and shortening the windows of early voting and things of that nature, it's always coming from Republican-led government, because the facts are the facts. The majority of people, believe it or not, and as well as the 3 million lead popular vote Clinton won by, believe in a lot of these moderate things. It's been shown in so many ways. You go to an average person on the street, even in the reddest part of the country, and you say, what do you think about the Affordable Care Act? And they're like, they love it. And you say, what do I think about Obamacare? I hate it. They don't even know it's the same thing. And a lot of these red areas or different places that voted for Trump, again, these are, you know, West Virginia, that's normally Democrats, you know, but they went for Trump. Parts of Pennsylvania, Democrat, they went for Trump. Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, all places that actually voted for Obama went for Trump this time. So if you turn out the vote and, you know, go back to Howard Dean's 50 state strategy, where you, you know, even in the lowest parts of Mississippi, and you say, look, this is an economics issue. You know, you can't blame Obama anymore. He's, you know, in the first week alone, all of his policies benefited the rich. His cabinet is full of the rich. And you stick to the issues. But the other critical component is we also have to develop leadership, too. We have to be willing to, I think Keith Ellison said it best at the Democratic, the DNC debate for the new chair. He said, look, if you want to get involved, run. Why not run? We now have 21-year-old members of the House because they just said they saw a problem in their small town. They made a run for it. So that's the, you know, two things. We have to, people think it's insurmountable because we have so much of the country that's red in the middle. But these people aren't necessarily Klan members. They're just uninformed in a lot of cases. Come to them with the facts, speak to them in a language they understand, and come with a nice high voter turnout, and we can flip it.
Right. Go ahead, caller. Did you have a follow-up question?
No, sir. I'm like screaming and clapping on mute because I don't want to interrupt. And I really appreciate the direction this conversation has taken, and that you all have taken the time out to, you know, really voice your ideas and your opinions and your views about what you see going on. Thank you for doing. Doing what you're doing. We'll keep listening.
Thank you. Sure. Well, we appreciate.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Yep, we really appreciate you calling in to comment, listen, ask questions. You know, this is a very really knowledgeable group, and we really do believe in the people and the power of the people, and you know, we hope through this avenue, through this vehicle of podcasting, that we can bring you you know, perspective. Geekonis, I was thinking the other day. When I believe you had posted something on a feed about the government workers, and you know, when I really think, you know, when we take a step back, and as much as this president is talking about returning the government to the people, everything I look at, you know, whether it's the dismantling of the regulations that are put in place to protect the earth and protect the environment, to the hiring freeze that directly impacts those of us who live in the DC metro Virginia area. You know, when I look at the decisions that are being made, I think in some cases where you say, okay, yeah, if you're going to build a wall, you're going to hire a whole lot of people to build a wall, and you have to need people to maintain the wall. But then when I look at this concept of the trickle-down economics again, you know, I think the impact – oh, and then even if you look at what's even as far over – don't jump out of your seat when I say it. But even if you look at what's even happened in Israel has started to build settlements again. You know, and again, so
they never stop.
They never stop. But it's like because they know that they have an ally, and this goes back to the UN vote where people were all mad at Obama and the Obama administration for not supporting Israel in the vote. But the thing is that's because they supported the two-state solution. And so they believe in the two-state solution and by supporting Israel and they make this always make a big deal about it. But Geekonis, what are some of the other human impacts of the decisions that are being made now? We got government workers, we've got the people who could be affected by the pipeline, you know, regulations, environment, we've already seen in Israel. Obviously, Mexico is now going to be directly impacted. I mean, are there any other human impacts that we should be watching out for and looking at?
Well, wow. It's only been a week, surprisingly. But, you know, not even. Here's the thing. And if you actually just look at it, right? Let's start with something like the quote-unquote Muslim ban. So you ban these countries and... It's funny how the government itself is rebelling against Trump. Department of Defense put out a tweet today about a Corporal Muhammad who was actually a Syrian refugee who joined the Marine Corps and is now fighting in the war, helping to, you know, liberate Syria. You know, and the DOD, I could only assume that tweet was to counter this vote. So, you know, immigration is what built this country. I know it sounds cliche, but just on simple things like on the idea of Syria, Steve Jobs' father was Syrian. Imagine if we had a law then where, you know, Syrians couldn't come in, you know, and it sounds very crazy when you think about it, but a lot of our actors, a lot of our talented people in America are from immigrants. How many Steve Jobs, how many Albert Einstein's we're denying. So just on a purely altruistic, you know, on that level, when you look at, you know, the emboldening of those who America traditionally are cautious and worried about, like Russia, you know, Russia feels emboldened. They're popping champagne. They're so excited. You mentioned Israel. I don't really like to talk about that on this show, but they feel emboldened. You know, President Obama in the last hours released $221 million of the Palestinian Authority's money as his parting gift, I guess. But, you know, all of Europe and much of the Western world is saying, look, you have to agree to what everyone says is the international law per the 1967 borders. And Israel has decided, no, we're just going to take all the land and do what we want. And now Trump is saying, oh, we're going to build an embassy in Jerusalem, which is against the international community's wishes. So, you know, you have international and real quick on the government thing, the hiring freeze, people don't even have an understanding of how that was basically a corporate handout. By freezing the government and saying the government can't hire, not only did you affect like veterans, where you have the VA that's 51% understaffed already, and we all know about all the drama behind veterans not getting service because there's just not enough employees. Well, you froze the VA from being able to hire federal employees. So guess what? It's just going to get worse for veterans. You froze almost every agency, most of them understaffed. The entire federal government is at its lowest manpower since the 60s. But they keep persisting with this myth of this big bloated government. And it's actually cheaper to hire government employees. Because if you don't hire government employees, you got to hire contractors. And the thing about contractors are you can pay $35 to $55 an hour on average for a government employee. But when you hire a contractor to do the work the government can't do because they can't hire, you now have to pay anywhere from $100 to $150 an hour. Because in federal contracting, you have this thing called loaded rates. The government has to not only pay the hourly rate, they also have to include it in that rate. It's called a wrap rate. That includes the company's general and administration fees, their profit fees, what it costs to give the person benefits, and any other things they can load into that rate. So you sometimes end up paying two or three times. And when I say you, I mean you, the American taxpayer, two or three times for a person that if the government had hired him, it would have been a lot cheaper. But guess what agency didn't get frozen? I take the guess. Department of Defense. And why is that? Because that's where some of the biggest shenanigans are going on. But if you live in DC and you know anything about the contracting world, the contracting game, every big contracting company is excited right now because now they're just going to make millions and millions of dollars contracting work to the government agencies because they need to augment their staff with civilian contractors. It's completely sickening because they can just say whatever they want and they rely on people's ignorance to get away with what they're doing. So it's multi-tiered. It's so many women's rights, minority rights, immigration, on every level in less than a week. He's systematically, not to sound dramatic, but he's literally destroying the economy, destroying our standing in the world and destroying the government. And only people that's going to be happy is these rich billionaires and his friends and that he's put in place and working behind the scenes.
Yep. We got a couple of callers. I wanted to give Phoenix a chance to comment. I know we were talking about human capital, how the people are going to be impacted by some of these choices. And I know that she also has the pulse of the people. Phoenix, did you want to comment, anything that we've said up to this point before I open the line to a couple of callers?
No, I mean, I think what we've been saying is that people are going to be affected, even though the people who did vote for him, and even though they may be in like really strong denial of it, you know, with these alternative facts and whatnot, they're going to be affected, and it's going to be a point where, what then? You know, do they join with the people that they've been calling, you know, crying liberals for all this time? Does the left and also the Democrats, because people have been wondering about these hearings, you know, like why go through some of these hearings and some of these people are still going to like vote for some of these cabinet picks and whatnot. So it's kind of like we're like, you know, the previous caller asked, like, what do we do? Where's the action at with when people do start realizing they've been had? You know, will there be able to be a working together? I think there's still some harsh feelings, though. I know I don't want to be friends with somebody who voted for Trump, but that's me right now. I'm still angry. So,
and that's fair to be angry at this point, because the more that we sit here and we watch this, and, you know, yes, we know that there's some people out there who, you know, when they say they want their country back, it was those folks, you know, we know that. But then, you know, we really get on those folks that said, well, I can't vote for a woman, or you have folks that said, well, I just want to see change and Hillary wasn't going to be the change. But I'm like, do you not understand? I mean, do you not understand what can happen under this person? I mean, even if you want change, this isn't the kind of change you want, folks. I'm trying to tell you. But folks weren't listening. They just saw the whole Hopi changey thing. They're like, hey, let's go down this path. But let me open some line. We got three callers on hold. I want to try to get to some of these callers. First caller, a longtime listener, and the man that I think he commented a while back, you know, saying that when we get to places like this, this is where we need to unify. This is where we need to come together and support each other to get through these times. Ladies and gentlemen, Bison for Life is on the line. What's going on, Bison?
Good evening. How's everyone doing this evening?
Fired all up, right. Ready to go.
Pushing through.
I'm going to be the contrarian this evening. I'm not going to speak too long because of other callers, but I want to say a couple things. Does anybody know who Penny Pritzker is?
No, enlighten.
She was the outgoing Commerce Secretary. She was worth $2.7 billion. Does anybody know who John King Jr. is? He replaced Arne Duncan at education.
That's ironic. I'll be quiet.
I wanted to say that because billionaires aren't just a Republican thing. Okay, the Women's March on Saturday, where were the majority of the Democratic Congress people, senators and House members?
There were some there.
The majority of them were at a donors conference hosted by David Brock. Google David Brock, and I think you will be thoroughly disgusted. I'm a native Washingtonian, born and bred. I have a relative who's a current sitting member of Congress. And let me tell you, it's worse than you think it will be. Because we saw this coming, but we think it wouldn't happen. But I want to take I want to differ with Darf a little bit. The Dems won't be able to flip Congress. They won't be able to flip it. I just don't see that the numbers aren't there. The GOP has literally total control of the American government. If you look at governor's mansions, state houses, they lost over 1,000 seats under Obama. This was a slow burn and nobody paid attention to. And now that the fires reach our front door, everybody want to panic. And say what you want. Trump stayed on message. It was jobs, jobs, jobs. And what has happened under former President Obama is we have an Uber economy. We have people working 3 and 4 jobs to try to maintain what one good paying job did maybe 15 or 20 years ago. And that had an effect. I know a lot of African Americans who voted for Trump. And not because they was against Hillary. They wanted to see some sort of change. So I think, like Democrats and neoliberals tend to always do, you got to start focusing on the next war. Well, the last war is over and Trump's in office. We got to find how to get people motivated to go to the polls. Because after 2018, you have 2020, which is a presidential election and also a census. And what happens in the census, that affects how House districts are drawn.
Right.
So we have a lot of focus we have to do. So I'm going to shut up here and let the other callers have a time to chime in. I just wanted to kind of bring a different perspective to this conversation. You know I'm going to be there for you guys. So good luck, and I'll hang up and listen.
The empire has to strike back.
Of course. Thanks, Bison. All incredibly good points. And I mean, that's one thing that's great, just the sharing of knowledge that we have here. I'm sorry, Geekonius, did you want to say something before I open the next one? Yes, go right ahead.
I did. I have to call my brother out because in one breath, he said it'll never happen. And then said, we got to get out to the polls. That's exactly what I said. Nothing will never happen if people don't vote. Midterm elections are historically not voted on the same, people don't participate on the same level they do presidential elections, as Phoenix brought up earlier. That was what happened to Obama in 2012, for instance, in different midterms, 2010, excuse me, when we lost control of the House the first time. It was because people did not come out to vote. Even in this election where Hillary won by 3 million votes, 50% of the electorate didn't vote. So people don't understand. I meant what I said. We have to get out the vote. It ain't about what Democrats won't be able to do or we won't be able to vote. We can flip it if people vote. Because the numbers show, statistics have shown that when people vote, they tend to vote Democrat when it's a high turnout, which is why Republicans spend so much time into gerrymandering and trying to lessen the turnout, because they know if you lessen turnout, they stand a chance. And, you know, you look at those states, even with the electoral that Hillary Clinton lost, you know, dear states, I hate to say it, some people are going to be upset, but it's the truth. Hillary lost Wisconsin and Michigan by less votes than what Jill Stein got. In other words, I think it was Michigan, Hillary lost by 12,000 votes and Jill Stein had got like 25,000 votes. So yeah. She also had that going against her, the fact that you had Johnson and Jill Stein siphoning votes away from her in those states. So from my looking at it, people say, oh yeah, the numbers were wrong. No, I think the numbers were right. Just no one anticipated people staying home at the level they did, or that Johnson and Stein was going to get so many votes. But Hillary was on track to actually win. But point is, if we get people out to vote, you can flip the House. And yes, the Democrats are not any better when it comes. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not saying, oh, rah-rah Democrats, they're, you know, their stuff don't stink and they don't have wealthy donors and stuff. However, can't nobody deny, which is why I want to smack people around in the face who were talking all that craziness about there's no difference between Hillary and Trump, which is kind of a play of what Biden said. Oh, the Democrats are no better. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. They may be weasels and got corporations in their pocket, but I guarantee you they wouldn't put neo-Nazis in the White House. I guarantee you they wouldn't do policies that are discriminatory on their surface. That's one thing we could bank on. We might be upset about economical stuff, but we ain't got to worry about social issues like, you know, the right to vote, people getting deported, countries that are been our enemy for decades now emboldened by our actions. So I
got you.
I mean, I would just chime in real quick to say, just really quickly, like, I mean, I would say it's not so much that they're better. With the deportations and stuff, Obama did deport people, you know.
He deported more people than anybody in history.
Exactly. You know, so, I mean, it's not necessarily that we don't have to deal with social issues. What it is, and I had a debate with someone like this on Twitter yesterday, was that we have more room as working people, as the people to maneuver with Democrats. It's about strategy for us. It's always us and them when it comes to the two-party system, period. But what it is with working people, with people in general, when it comes to the Democrats, we can push them to the left. We can push them on certain issues and they can budge where it's like, because they don't want to outright seem like they're trying to screw us over. So there has to be concessions made. While with the Republicans, with the GOP, with the ultra right, you know, that's not the case. You know, they don't, it's not, we're on the defensive constantly, you know, we're having to fight to keep the stuff that we already gained, as opposed to being able to push further on the stuff that we have gained, which we would have been able to do, I think, a bit more under a Clinton presidency, you know, because even like with the DNC, you know, that platform she put forward was very left-leaning, you know, very progressive. But that didn't come because she suddenly realized it, because she knew that's what the people wanted. And we pushed her, we were able to push her to the left of things, you know? So it's really strategy when it comes down to it. You know, that's the thing I combat when people are like, oh, it would have been the same. They're just more covert. I'm like, but we could have maneuvered better. It's about strategy, you know, not just, oh, the revolution tomorrow, you know, for these people.
You have a better chance of moving forward, where now we're going backwards, fighting just to get back to where we were.
Yep, going backwards very quickly. Just two things from one from the chat room. For those who call in live to the show, there's a great chat room. You're more than welcome to call in 213-943-3596. We got about 25 minutes left in the show. Bison pointed out that 53% of the electorate didn't vote in the last election. So there are voters out there to be had. And talking about voting, from our good friend Kaiju on Twitter, retweeting a tweet from Chris Hayes from MSNBC, who quoted Ben Jacobs from The Guardian. Pence says administration will do full evaluation of voter rolls in the country. And basically, Chris Hayes replied to that, this lays the groundwork for a massive federal voting purge. So, you know, when we're talking about voter suppression and the things that we need to do, this is why we have to fight. This is exactly why people have to turn out in mass, because they are building a system. And anybody who's followed what the GOP has done over the last 10 years, redistricting, and then your voter suppression laws, your ID laws, when they talk about taking your country back, I think about those moments where they show where they had to do the tests, you know, in order to get your ID. Poll tax, you know, let's not go. They really feel like they're trying to go this far back. Let me open the line right here.
Republicans,
right?
Why? It's a big deal. They want to lessen the vote.
Right. Exactly. Caller from the 334, you are on with the Geeks on Politics. Get the show right today. How you doing today?
It's not too bad. I think we're going to be screwed for a while. Because when I was thinking about it, I'm trying not to cuss. Well, a lot of people voted because the hand that was feeding everybody equally, or starting to feed everybody equally, and they couldn't take that. It's like, what? We have to share? So they got busy, because most people know this guy isn't qualified to do damn it, except run his own business into the ground. Most people know that. But yet they voted for this guy anyway because, hey, I don't want to share. I don't think I should have to.
Right.
So with that mentality, I don't think strategy alone can help that. Because that's an attitude. That is a mentality. That's why you see all these, you know, white supremacists coming out of the woodwork. They feel comfortable now because they know, like, well, a lot of other people feel superior too. So what I think is going to have to happen is everybody is going to have to start. They're going to have to take it too, because they're going to be affected way more than they think they are. And it's already happening, especially with things like the government jobs. And a lot of veterans voted for Trump. Guess who hires the most veterans? The federal government. So this hiring freeze, who's going to hurt? The people that voted for him. Most people that on WIC, SSA, and all this other stuff, he told them that, hey, I'm thinking about cutting this stuff. They still voted, because, again, the hand that feeds equally, so they don't want to share. So they'll cut. And you'll hear it about maybe 6 months, maybe 3 months, if he keeps on at the pace he's at. You'll have several people crying, like, oh, I didn't know. No, you knew. You just didn't care. You thought it wasn't going to affect you because either of your skin color or because of your alliance with whatever party. Like, no, they can't do it like that. If it's going to affect poor people, it's going to affect you too. And, A, it sucks to be them, because they're about to get a reality check, but sometimes that's what people need. So I don't think it's just about us strategizing. Some people are going to have to get hurt, and it's not going to be just black and brown people. It's going to have to be people that are like, oh, I didn't know this could happen to me.
Yep. That's so very true, and I think that a lot of people are facing that music right now because they didn't have the vision. They didn't see, and this goes to the whole concept of an educated electorate. That they just did not see the potential impact of what could happen. And granted, it took a little bit of vision and a little bit of understanding of history and really just listening to what the heck the guy was saying. Because if you listen to what he was saying, you know, he may have been saying some nice things that kind of appealed to you on one level, but you didn't understand he was actually talking about you at the same time. And
look at his cabinet picks. Let me see. Who is his cabinet pick for Hood?
Carson set for HUD. Carson.
Okay, here's the thing. You know who else uses housing assistance? It's not just black and brown people.
Yep.
Well, the people who use the majority of these programs come from red states.
Yeah.
But you know, here's the thing, and I didn't mean to just cut in like that, but Lyndon Johnson a long time ago said the root of this quote-unquote Southern strategy is basically convincing even the poorest white person that by virtue of their whiteness, they're better than everybody else of color. And once you get into that brain, so, you know, that mentality, they don't even think in terms of, wait a minute, I'm also on the ACA. Wait a minute. I also on WIC and welfare and all this other stuff. They just think of, I'm going to be all right because Trump's in office and all these people who look like me is there, and we're going to make everything the way I remember it in this imaginary Mayberry that America lived in. And, you know, we can't downplay motivation. There is a...
Oh, yeah, no.
You know, you made the point. Bison made the point. Phoenix made the point at various times. There was a definite... Trump was definitely the playing the flute, you know, and it sung the right tune, just like Sanders did. And where Clinton struggled with messaging, I think toward the end of the cycle, I think it was a little bit too late, but they had finally got on a message of saying, look, you don't have to feel like you can go to a cookout with her or go out for beers. The fact is she's qualified and you should vote for her. I think that's where we should have went with that. But the thing is, we can't downplay voting. Why didn't 53% of the electorate vote? Why? A lot of, especially those people who could have flipped the election toward Democrats, they weren't motivated, some of them.
Apathy. Like and, nobody, if they didn't get Bernie Sanders, they're like, oh, I can't get Bernie Sanders, well, I'm just going to stay home. Or if I can't get this person, and a lot of, probably a lot of Republicans stayed home because they're like, this is the guy that y'all are picking?
Yeah, because a lot of Republicans, mm-hmm. you look at those Johnson numbers in some states, Johnson was racking up 140, 200,000. Because that was their protest vote. They couldn't bring themselves to vote for Clinton, even though it's funny that George Bush Sr. even voted for Hillary Clinton. You know, we got to look at the messaging too. We got to fire up Americans toward a message. You know, like for instance, you know, Biden said Trump's message was jobs, jobs, jobs. Our message in 2018 should be he lied, he lied, he lied. And if nothing else, get the liar out. You know, lying Trump.
That's very strong. That's real strong.
If I were running for office, that would be my messaging.
Yeah.
He lied, he lied, he lied.
Thank you.
He kept none of his promises.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. Glad you made it. Talk to you later.
Thank you. Bye.
You know, and I want to point out something. I'm going to bring on the next call. I just want to point out something real quick. And I've been fairly consistent with it. I've been saying for a while, you know, America, you're being lied to. And I don't know. I'm going to just keep telling you until you see it. And I hope that everyone else, you know, does whatever little piece and part they're going to do. But I can't help but look at the press conference that Spicer's, I think it was the first or second press conference, where he said, you know, it's just not fair. The media is being so hard on us. People say that you can't do it. You can't do it. Then you turn around and do it. The media needs to be more fair. The media is so hard. And I'm like, I want to say, how effing dare you? How dare you? You know, that your president went after my president for how many years on some bull? That wasn't even true. And you can tell me the president, when he was a candidate, he said to talk about Lion Ted, lock her up, little Marco. Are you serious? You dare have the gall to say anybody's being too hard on somebody because they're actually posting real pictures of a real event? Oh gosh, are you that afraid of facts? I'm just gonna stop right there. I'm gonna bring up next caller has been holding for 20 minutes. Caller, you on with the Geeks on Politics. How you doing this evening?
Hi, everybody. This is Armchair.
Don't strain yourself talking a very low voice. How you doing, Armchair?
Congrats.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So yeah, hopefully my meds don't wear off while I'm on this call. So if I decide that it don't make any sense to just cut me off, just send out the clown from the Apollo Theater with the cage to get me off.
Sandman Sims. Sandman.
All right. Yeah, Sandman. Yeah, I couldn't think of his name. Oh my goodness. So yes, I wanted to speak to something that you guys were thinking about earlier in the podcast, and that was kind of the Trump electorate, the people basically who got Trump elected, which of course were all the red state people with all the red state values. And the question kind of came up is why? Why would these people vote for this? Why do these people believe all of this stuff that Trump is putting out? Why are they buying all of this? And really, I think that it comes down to three things. I think that first of all, a lot of the base who voted for Donald Trump were white evangelical Christians or people who espouse those values. So they say they're Christian. They espouse those red state values. Now they might not have darkened the door of church for, you know, like 20 years, but that's their values. And I think that it comes down to three things. I think it comes down to anti-intellectualism.
I think it comes down to fear, and I think it comes down to white supremacy. In these white, even I'm very much adjacent to white evangelical Christianity. I'm a minister. I've ministered in predominantly white churches for like the last, since 2003. So whatever, I'm not going to strain myself and do the math there. So since 2003. So, I mean, I've seen a lot, heard a lot, rolled my eyes a lot, whatever, at stuff. And so there's, so in that culture and in state culture, I guess, in a red state. I'm not in Virginia anymore. I'm back in Missouri, which is sort of
we miss you.
Yeah, I know. I miss being in Virginia. I miss being close to DC. But sometimes I want to go back. But my family's is in Missouri, and that's where I'm from. But the culture, even like where I'm at, I'm in the reddest part, one of the reddest parts of Missouri. And the culture is very anti-intellectual. So anything that smacks of having a university education, that smacks of philosophy, that smacks of anything that isn't like the Bible or something adjacent to the Bible, people are very suspicious and are very wary of that. And so you have people that so basically like whenever you have Trump not telling the truth or the alternative facts, as we call it, these politicians are almost kind of elevated because this rhetoric and stuff that they use is very similar to what you would hear an evangelical preacher say. Like the way that the message is delivered is very similar to political rallies, are very similar to a lot of these people's church experiences. And so you have a person who's up there behind a podium, and that person you think is supposed to be infallible in some ways. There's a lot that we could go into with that. So there's an anti-intellectual, an anti-thought, an anti-whatever kind of culture among these people. And so they're just very much suspicious of anything that seems liberal, of anything that stuff that we would, I mean, you know, I have a degree from a 4-year university, from a state university, and a lot of people around here do, because I'm in a college town, but the idea of philosophy, the idea of different things, people just are against that. People just don't, they're not against education per se, but they want their education to look a certain way. Like a valid argument is, in this part of the country, is creationism should be taught alongside the theory of evolution in a science classroom. That is a valid debate around here. And people feel like they, in their passions, I mean, like, I'm a Christian, I believe in creation, but I'm also a science person too. I say keep it out of, I mean, it's a faith-based thing, it shouldn't be in the classroom. But there are people that are like, well, they're teaching the theory of evolution, they're teaching we should come from monkeys, and they should be teaching creation too, God's word. That is a valid thing. That is a valid, you can have a debate with people about that, and people will get in their passions about it, and people legitimately think that Genesis should be taught in the classroom. Legitimately think with all of their heart, and don't understand why Darwin is being taught in a classroom. So that's the climate with anti-intellectualism that you're dealing with. So then with fear, you have people that are so afraid that basically they're afraid of everything. They're afraid that whenever President Obama was elected, I worked at a church, and it was a predominantly white church, and I went to the office the day after Election Day. And a couple of my coworkers were asking me, well, how do you feel about president? How do you feel about Barack Obama being elected as president? Because, you know, I'm black, so it's like, what do you think, a black person, about Obama being elected? And one of my coworkers insisted that President Obama was the Antichrist. She could not be convinced otherwise that he was the Antichrist. And she was like, I think he's the Antichrist. I think that he's going to bring the end times and all this other stuff. And it's like there's this fear. So then for the last 8 years, I've seen these people with fear, and it's seen these people like, oh my goodness, he's a Muslim, he's a Kenyan, he's gonna ISIS, he's gonna this and that, and people, like, I hate to say it this way, but they get off on that fear, on something bad's going to happen. So we've got to have this hero, we've got to have this savior. And so that sort of comes into with the white supremacy aspect of it too. Is that this group of people, they want, and it was mentioned earlier in this, it was mentioned a few minutes before I got on, that of this group of people want to go back to Mayberry. I sat through a sermon basically was saying that the times in the 50s were better than the times are now. Now, you could see where, as a Black woman, where I would kind of object to the 1950s being the gold standard for where a country needs to be. But really, I mean, and people were, yes, amen. We're like, this is true, yes. And I'm sitting here like, if this was the 50s, I wouldn't even be sitting up in here right now. Y'all wouldn't even be letting me sit up in here, let alone be a minister up in this piece. But okay.
Armchair.
But there's this idea. Yeah.
Can I ask you a quick question? We got 8 minutes left. Can I ask you a quick question, especially with your obviously strong religious background? From your experience and talking to the parishioners and those are the people that you've been around, how do they reconcile Trump's actions and the way that he speaks about, he's been seen speaking about women negatively, how he is very disrespectful to the people during the campaign, get them out, and the things you say, he was obviously telling lies and falsehoods. And, Geekonius mentioned earlier that, he had a series of marriages, there've been, stories. How do they reconcile the man and then looking at the man through the lens of their religion and still support him? That's one thing I've wondered. In your experience, do they ever do that?
Oh, yeah. There's several different camps that people fall into. Probably the most reasonable, it's not reasonable, but the most honest group of people, I would say, is the group of people that say, you know what, Trump is trash. He's anti-woman, he's anti-this, he's anti-that. But because the fulcrum issue for a lot of people on this was abortion. And so I know people who voted third party because they didn't want Trump, but they wanted a pro-life candidate. So there are people that felt like, well, Trump is the person who is most likely to be elected, who's pro-life, or who claims to be pro-life. So I'm going to vote for him, even though I think that 53 million aborted babies since 1973, that is the most important issue. And so I'm going to vote for him, even though I think that he's trash, even though I think he's an awful person, I'm going to vote for him. And that's probably the most honest group of people out there. So then you have people that basically are like, well, David in the Bible was flawed. David, he had an affair with Bathsheba, mm-hmm. and God still appointed him. And God still appointed him to be king of Israel, and a whole lot of faulty hermeneutics, a whole lot of faulty theology and apologetics there, which I won't bore you with that. But so they basically are saying, well, Trump is the one that God has raised up in this hour to be the person. So yeah, he's flawed, but God's gonna help him, and he's the person. They ignoring that for 8 years. Somehow Obama couldn't have been that person either, but that kind of plays into the white supremacy and plays into some of the subtle racism that's there. So they reconcile it by kind of Bible or Jesus juking it and saying, well, God must have raised up this person. And you have voices, prominent voices in evangelical circles who are saying that, and then the parishioners are regurgitating that because you have somebody like Franklin Graham, Billy Graham's son, who's saying that type of stuff. And right. You have people like James Dobson, who is a prominent, who was a prominent Christian thought leader, basically who reamed out Bill Clinton for his immorality, basically say, flip the script and kind of say, he's flawed and whatever. So then you have the group of people that they really don't give a crap, that they think that it doesn't matter to them, even that they can't reconcile it with the Bible. They just think that Trump, that they are so anti-Democrat, so anti-liberal, so anti-whatever, it doesn't matter what the Bible says to them. They are just so wrapped up in thinking that the grand old party is abbreviated GOD instead of GOP, that they think that God is the Republican Party, and so they don't care. I mean, you could have had a baboon run for president, and they would still vote for a baboon because if it had an R next to its name. And so that's kind of – so people right. – just the whole reconciling, like there's a lot of, like there are people, and it's a minority who are very honest and just say, you know, I think this person's horrible, but, right. but there's a lot of right. kind of piecemealing the Bible and whatever.
Right.
To reconcile.
Yeah,
that.
I got you. I got you. Well, thanks, Armchair. I got to let you go because we got to wrap the show. We only got a couple minutes left, but thanks so much for calling in. Get them the strength. Enjoy those meds, lady. Enjoy those meds. All right. We'll talk to you later. Thanks.
All right,
folks. We've only got a couple minutes left. I want to give our illustrious panel the last word before we move on out. Dark Phoenix, final thoughts.
Yeah, I think we have a lot. We still have a lot to chew on. There's a lot of layers to this. And that's what I've been saying. There's a lot of layers to why people voted for him in the first place, why people are still, in denial over the things that he's blatantly doing that will not be in their best interest as working class people. And also the layers of the resistance. There's people who consider themselves the resistance, but they're still focused on Clinton. They don't want to work with the Democrats, and that's not a good strategy going forward. So to me, I think what we need to start focusing on, as we saw with the Women's March, and there's even layers to that when it comes to the fact that 94% of Black women did vote for Clinton and like 55% of white women didn't, and who was the march, it was a historic march, but there's this question of where do we go with the struggle? So I think that has to be the focus going forward for sure. Yeah, and us not trying absolutely. To lose our minds with right. all the bad news.
Yep. Unify, pulled together. We will support each other and get through this. Gikoni, his final thoughts.
I think the constant stream that's been said is a strategy. The one thing that the GOP has a strategy, even what Armchair brought up about the religious right, they know that to get some of their objectives done, they have to go with a flawed candidate, even if that means it goes against their core principles, just to get their objectives done. Whereas Democrats and people who lean to the left often get caught up in our differences, which is why some of them wouldn't vote for Clinton. They didn't understand, like the right understands, that you got to go sometimes with a quote unquote flawed candidate to get your objectives through. And until we get the left on that same messaging, that look, they don't have to be perfect, but who do you have a better chance with? We're going to fall into some problems.
Yep. And that is so true. And I listened to the comments by Pence and by Trump at the GOP retreat today, and just to hear them applaud at the various elements of the things that even he was saying, to see the imagery of them smiling and shaking hands like everything's okay again, it was pointed out very early on in this broadcast to normalize what is happening right now is not normal, and we cannot treat it as normal. And we have to continue to bring truth, true to the light, and continue to walk the righteous path. So everyone continue to be strong, continue to support each other, continue to speak truth to power, and don't lose hope. We're gonna get through this, but we gotta pull together. We've gotta be unified in making sure that we bring about positive change. And I've been saving this for all those out there who thought that he was gonna help you, that thought he was gonna be your great white hope. I have to tell you.
Oh, I say it again. You've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked, bamboozled, led astray, run amok.
That's right, y'all. You have. And this has been a great episode. Thanks to our panelists. Thanks to all of our great callers. Really appreciate it. All the support. Please, we'll be posting this up on SoundCloud and on theblackgeeks.com. Make sure you check it out, like it, far and wide. Thanks so much. Appreciate the support. And we'll be back soon. Stay tuned. Twitter, The Black Geeks. We'll let you know. We'll be back. Thanks. Have a great day.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud. roots in clear for the whole round world to hear. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart.